extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Hey everyone, welcome to Extra Time presented by AT&T 5G. I, of course, am David Goss alongside Tom Boger and Charlie Davies. We've got a huge episode coming up. I am in Soccer City, USA. Do you guys have any idea where I am? What does that mean to you?
It's insider trading because we already know where you are, the people on the Zoom, unless Charlie wasn't paying attention. So I'll let Charlie
I don't
go.
Think Charlie's paying attention. Charlie, where am
You're
I?
You're in Boston. It's crazy.
Sorry for pushing you in front of the bus there, city. Charlie.
You're in St. Louis.
Interesting. What would be your second guess if that was incorrect?
If that was incorrect, my second guess...
Who did producer Andres say is hosting
Seattle.
At
Seattle.
Yes, I am in Seattle, Washington, which is one of 13 arguably stated Soccer City USAs. Shout out to Kansas City, St. Louis, as Charlie said. I don't know, LA, I feel like, probably says that. What am I missing here? Columbus has probably said that about themselves. Oh, Anders is kind enough to put Portland in the chat. I hadn't even thought of Portland. So, Anders, thank you for
the
always
disrespect.
Sure Portland
the
gets
the
entire
state of New Jersey.
Listen, Tom, I think you missed last show when I said I rep New Jersey when I want to and slam it when I don't.
Goss, when I'm listening to the shows back, I'm like walking my dog and like I'm yelling, like I'm on the show, like I'm yelling back. Like, yeah, Goss, like you rep in New Jersey. I'll take it right now.
Yeah. And then I slam them when I choose to because I'm technically from Long Island and I live in New York. But I will give New Jersey Soccer City USA credit as well. Welcome, everybody, to the show. We've got a huge show coming up here from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. Trophy awarded last night, the first international trophy in NYCFC's history, the second in less than a year. So we'll talk about Campeones Cup, how they won it, what it all means. And then, of course, midweek MLS action, a ton of teams open the door for the playoff race to continue a little bit longer. A few teams have clinched spots, some while playing, some while not. So we'll talk all about that. And guess what? The final pre-World Cup USMNT roster is officially out. People are angry. People are happy. And we will break it all down for you. I think having Charlie on the show, we'll probably do a ton of center back talk. We'll talk D-mid. We'll talk right back. Just the position that Charlie only wants to focus on that are controversial and still finding their spot on the team. Maybe we'll have a little bit of time to talk about assistant coaches and who Charlie's really passionate about being on the bench at times and not. But definitely we won't touch anything that starts with 9 or number 9 or anything like that. Anders put here in the rundown to start. I'm hosting, so I don't know why you put this in here. I'm not going to do this to myself. We put out a call for mailbag and we got a lot of responses that have to do with my wedding specifically. People wanting pictures, which I can understand because I wore a maroon suit and I looked aces. I looked like a really good version of a 1970s used television salesman.
I can
in
confirm
Miami,
that.
Which is the peak that I can get to. So I'll try and push out a couple of those. And then Perry Becker, who is a Timbers fan, so shout out to Soccer City USA, said that I should have given my wife goalie gloves because she's a keeper.
Ooh.
That's a great dad joke right there. And I think I might have my first anniversary gift.
Some gold keeper gloves?
Already settled. Know. Oh, interesting. I was kind of just going to give generic side of a field. All right, so if I had to pick a goalkeeper in the world to get signed goalkeeper gloves for this gift, who do you think it should be?
One keeper, entire world?
Yeah, I could go anywhere. It's an anniversary gift. You got to go big, right?
You got to get a gold glove trophy from somewhere. Not even the gloves themselves. You got to get a gold glove trophy.
Wow, interesting. Okay, maybe that's what I'll go with. I don't know who my keeper would be. Probably Dida, right? That's like a fun goalkeeper.
Gotta go retro. Yeah.
I still don't know if I'd go with Dida. I think it's two. Buffon or Casillas. No?
Oh, Casillas is a good one. Yeah.
Buffon's a good shout too.
I wouldn't do Buffon because I like teams that qualify for the World Cup and are able to, you know, I like history and culture when I talk about soccer nations, which means let's dig in. Let's start with week 31. Before we get to Campione's Cup, let's talk about our soccer culture, the things that we loved that we saw this week. Five games on Tuesday, four MLS games on Wednesday, plus the Campione's Cup final. Tom, let's start with you. What's the best thing you saw?
Best thing I saw is Kai Kamara, 38 years young. It's Kai Kamara's season. Two goals and an assist for Chicago Fire in a 3-2 win. He's up to 8 goals and 7 assists in 1,300 minutes this season. This is a guy who was out of favor in Colorado in 2020, traded to Minnesota, where he didn't really play a ton. He went unsigned in 2021, signed with Finland, with a Finnish club in like the summer of 2021, and he could have been had by any team in this league, but he's back and he's killing it, and it's just so much fun to watch this guy kill it and continue to move up the charts.
So he is 8 goals away now from Landon Donovan for second all-time tied.
He can play until he's 45. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I guess my question is, where do you think he finishes?
I can't put a retirement date on this guy. The way he moves, the way he jumps, like it looks like he did 4 or 5 years ago. He doesn't look like he's slowed down physically. He still has that enthusiasm. Like, I was surprised when he went unsigned in 2021. So I just figured, oh, maybe teams know more than us, and maybe he was at some trials, and maybe people looked at tape or advanced numbers, but like, I don't know, to the naked eye, man, he looks like he could play. He could be MLS.
Would you say he's back with Montreal next year? Like, no doubt. It's 100%.
I mean, he should be I said that like Kai's but played for about 1,000 teams. And true. Like when he left Vancouver, I thought he was going to stay there, and Colorado seemed like a good fit. And then Minnesota, Adrian Heath talked about how much he always wanted to trade for him. And then he didn't play very much and was gone. So I think so, but dude, you never know with Kai.
Charlie, does it give you the itch? Do you feel like you have a couple more in you watching Kai do
not
his thing?
In the slightest bit. I not
all
even
right,
close.
Well, good. I'm glad. I wouldn't want to change your reality. I wouldn't want you to make you upset
that
way.
This has been bliss this side of things. So, yeah.
But let's state with Kai, I think this record, we talked about it a couple times. There's probably two ways that players now are going to get in this conversation. One is what Kai's doing, which is 18 years of professional soccer. The other is if there is a homegrown who stays, right? And they play 14 years, but from 18 to 32 or 33, and they always stay in Major League Soccer and continue to score goals at a decent rate. Feels like the Landon scenario is probably probably not going to happen, right? Superstar goes and then comes back and plays most of their career in MLS. But Kai Kamara, this record or wherever he lands, it will probably be untouched for a very long time. So congratulations to him continuing to do his thing. Best thing I saw, another goal scorer, Musa Diete, the hat trick off the bench. That alone, fantastic first hat trick in Austin FC history. I think the first hat trick off the bench in Major League Soccer since the goal king, Chris Wondolowski, did it. He did it in 2010. So it's been 12 years. But the main thing I liked was the second and third goal celebrations were just no emotion, mean mug. And if you're dropping RSL at home, you have expectations, your second Musa Diete big time signing, you should. I like that celebration. I like just being like, this is who I am. This is what I do. And I love that Gabrielsen read it on the third one, and he was going to run over and hug him and then recognize, and then he went slow walk next to him, and he was like, yeah, this is us. Cool, guys. So that was the best thing I saw this week. Charlie, what's your big takeaway?
My big takeaway is Inter Miami. I mean, this team was had no shot at the start of the year, right? They were long gone. Everyone was saying, you know, what a bust this whole organization's been. And here we are. They still have a shot. 39 points, 2 points out of the playoff spot, and they win 2-1 thanks to Gonzalo Higuain. I mean, this guy has 4 goals in the last 5 games. He has a brace. Everyone was saying he was out of it. He was disinterested. He wanted to leave. Right now, he's got 12 goals and 3 assists, and he looks happy. He looks fluid. He looks motivated. If he's playing the way he is, this team will get into the playoffs. If he continues to bang goals and they win out.
We've heard Gary Neville talk about it. Gary Neville. Whoa. Sorry. I had EPL All-Star games in my head for a second. We've heard Phil Neville talk about it. And I think you're seeing it. The difference when Pasuelo's on the field and it's not with Gonzalo Higuain, as you said, the way he acts, the way he sees the game, the way he's moving and I think Phil Neville's quote was, we needed an Higuain to pass the Higuain last year. Congratulations. You have Alejandro Pozuelo now, and they firmly control their own playoff race. We're going to dig into all of that, all of the playoff race in just a moment. Let's start with the trophy, though. Campeón de campeones of North America, of Mexico and U.S. and Canada. Campeones Cup decided, the fourth ever playing, because there was none in 2020. MLS is now 3-1, three-game winning streak in Campeones Cup for Major League Soccer. It was Atlanta in 2019, Columbus Crew last year, and then now NYCFC winning it at home at Yankee Stadium, their second ever trophy. Charlie, as you watch this game play out, as you watch them celebrate, sort of what's your big takeaway from what this means, whether for the league, NYCFC, or anything?
I would first start with New York City FC finally looking like the fluid, attacking, and exciting, entertaining side that we know they can be. And that's because Tylos Magno was looking like Tati Castellanos in his movement, checking for the ball, combining, great hold-up play, his movement, good touches. I thought to myself, that's the Tylos Magno that they were hoping for. And when they allowed Tati Castellanos to leave, they expected him to fill that role, because Tati Castellanos, he struggled quite a bit early on. He was playing on the left wing. He was behind Eber. Then he was able to flourish and blossom. Now we're seeing Tylos Magno. We've seen bits and pieces. We've seen flashes. He's been pretty consistent this year, but from that wide spot, moving to a central location for the team, and he really looked good. And now they have to build off this, because this, we all know, when he's on the pitch, when Collins is on the pitch, because we saw, I was really moved by Collins' motivation to go from center back and get into the attacking third and overlap and be an option. They really miss Collins. When Alexander Collins is on the pitch, that really allows them to be, you know, kind of one of those teams that can move just effortlessly across the pitch. And they have great symmetry, and the foundation with Chanot and Collins, it speaks volumes with the team. It sets the foundation. So they look good. Finally, they looked like the New York City FC that we expect them to be, one that challenges for the Eastern Conference when they play in that manner.
Tom, that second ever trophy for NYCFC, sort of getting it in this, their second worst run in their club's history. What do you sort of take away?
Before I get to NYCFC specifically, I want to say shout out to MLS clubs in general doing the quadruple over Liga MX. We got CCL with Seattle, Skills Challenge, the All-Stars won that. The All-Star Game proper, they won that, and now the Campeones Cup. I'm just saying it has to be put out there. The quadruple, we're counting it. And if, like, that's it. We're talking about it for Liverpool all year last year about the quadruple chase. Nobody's talking about this. People are asking. That's all I'm saying. But, yeah, this was a big result for NYCFC. They've looked straight up bad for, you know, a month or whatever it is. They've really struggled to replace Tati Castellanos. And I know Doyle said this 100 times, but it's the correct take that they were struggling so hard to get pressure on the ball. They were way too easy to play against. Keaton Parks coming back and getting more minutes was another one of my takeaways as well, that like, he's so important to this team. And like, I don't think that anybody doubted his quality, but I don't think that we truly recognize what the knock-on effect would be of him not being there until he wasn't there, because, you know, we saw them win MLS Cup while he was hurt last year. So I think that's super important. Charlie, like, it was encouraging to see Tylos Magno do what he's doing through the center. I still prefer him on the left. Like, it depends on what the fitness is for Hebert moving forward and kind of what the other pieces are looking like. But, like, Tylos Magno looked like, you know, halfway through the season, like, I still think I even voted him second on 22 under 22, but he looked like he could have challenged with Jesus Ferreira for that top spot in 22 under 22 when he was playing his natural left-wing position with Tati as a center forward. So I like him a lot better there. He looks so much more comfortable. But, again, at this time of the season, like, if he starts playing well here, that's good. You kind of – the experimentation is getting to a point where it has to be over. So like, this getting like a tangible trophy and an actual really good performance and a win is super important for this team.
He has a good track record in big games, obviously scored in Eastern Conference Finals last year. He was phenomenal in CCL to start this year.
Yeah.
All of that left wing or, you know, as a backup, but he has a track record of showing up in big games on top of the quality that we see from him week in and week out. You mentioned Keaton Parks returning. That's a huge one. Hebert did come off in the 25th, 30th minute. That's why Magno came on. He seemed to be fine. Taylor and Ben said he was sort of moving fine at halftime around the field, and then he stayed and celebrated with the team. He didn't go straight to, you know, have it looked at and dealt with, wasn't in street clothes. So I thought that was interesting. And I think for NYCFC fans, you're still hoping even if Magno is the starting center forward, you want Hebert as an option, and you want to be able to use him because they have big games coming up. Let's start with this weekend. They host New York Red Bulls at home, 1 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday to start out a weekend of some huge games. New York Red Bulls, congratulations. They clinched a spot in the playoffs last night without even playing, which is huge for them. That stretches their playoff streak. They now tie the Seattle Sounders for the longest ever playoff streak qualification. If Seattle were to make it this year, Seattle would move a year ahead. If they don't, then the Red Bulls would be tied for the longest ever. So all of that positive for the Red Bulls. Charlie, what do you take from Wednesday night for NYCFC that you want to see or you worry about going into
Santi Saturday? Rodriguez and Pereira on the flanks, because both of them are super dynamic, good movement, can shoot from distance. They're going to provide service. They're going to be able to combine. Maxi Morales now has options. When he gets on the ball, there's a lot of movement. And when you have players in front of you with that movement, and you can also use Tyus Magno as a wall and be able to combine with him, that's when New York City FC are at their best. Now, I questioned a back three with this group because ultimately I think, you know, Thiago Martins, he is, for me, has struggled more than he's been strong and successful, just with clumsy challenges at times, distribution. We saw that own goal. And that can happen. Players make mistakes. But I think ultimately, I'm not so sure this is the best way to move forward. But if you have Alexander Collins, who is a rock, who's the best defender in the group, maybe it can work. But I still say the wingbacks, I don't know if you can depend on them for 90 minutes to not only be good defensively, but getting involved in the attack and providing width when Pereira and Rodriguez tend to come inside and combined. So I think for this next game against the Red Bulls, do they stick with that? And if they do, getting the personnel right. So I think this was an experiment against Atlas, to be honest, with Pereira and Rodriguez and Eber. And then obviously Magno comes in and then you go, oh, we finally have it. That's the right mix. That's the right trio in the attack. Maxi Morales underneath. Perfect. But then it's balancing that behind them, making sure that you have two midfielders who can protect the back three, back five, whatever, however you're going to play, and getting that balance right, because Nick Cushing hasn't. And so if they get the midfield part right defensively, then you're going to shore up the center of the pitch, and that'll allow them to be so dynamic in the attack. So for me, it's all about the transition game when you're playing the Red Bulls. You know exactly how they play. They're not changing anything, but you have to be effective. Oh, don't say they. We know how they play. That's it.
They've gone. Listen, against NYC, I agree, but they've gone over 50% possession in their last two games. Okay. I understand they're home. I understand they're against different opponents. I'm just saying they have shifted the way they played.
We know who they are. We know who they are. We know the level of talent that the Red Bulls have. Lewis Morgan is still their guy. They don't have any superstars. That's just not how Red Bulls play. They try and force you into bad decisions. They outnumber you in different parts of the field, primarily full-on press. They push the outside backs high. They play a lot of 1v1. So if you win your duels, they give you openings. New York City FC have the players to take advantage of those openings. So this match, for me, is going to signal if New York City FC are ready to challenge this year and move forward. And then all of a sudden you're like, that's a team you don't want to play in the playoffs. Or they lose. They could get blown out, or they lose. And you say, they need to make some changes, some real changes, because talent is not the issue with this group. It's for sure not the issue. They have the players to win. This all comes down to setup and tactics and management.
Yeah, Charlie, that was the point I was going to make, in that this is going to be a big game in that tells whether they're out of this hole or not. Like, I'm just even going through the results. Like, they haven't beaten a team that's currently above – Columbus is currently above the playoff line. No, they haven't beaten a team that's currently above the playoff line since July when it was the Red Bulls. Like, that's a prolonged slide. Like, they got to win against, obviously, Atlas. Like, they haven't even been winning much in general. But before that, it was Chicago. Like, the Red Bulls are firmly a playoff opponent. They're one of the kind of handful of teams in that next tier below Philly in the East. If if they need to kind of show if this performance was real against Atlas or if this was an Atlas team that maybe didn't care as much about the Campeones Cup or maybe had an eyes on Liga MX.
And they're bad, in Liga MX right now. So, I mean, they're just a bad team too. So it's not like you're getting the top team in the competition from Liga MX either.
Yeah. Yeah, and to clean up what meandering a little bit, Columbus are above the playoff line, but New York City lost to Columbus the last time they played. So the last time they beat a team above the playoff line was the Red Bulls in July. And like, that's a long time. And we're all kind of saying positive things as we should about this game because there was a lot to be celebrated by NYCFC. But when we have the space to back up with a couple games, depending on what happens with the Red Bulls and then moving forward, then we'll know if this was an aberration or if this was a sign of, all right, Nick Cushing got it right. The players kind of clicked and they're kind of back on track. And again, as you said before, Charlie, if they are who we thought they were.
Sometimes you read into things too much. Sometimes we ignore things. I talked about this with Jaime Macias for a little while on MLS Today. It was telling to me, and this isn't because I didn't think this was the case, I just don't know, that Alex Collins, after the final whistle, ran over to Nick Cushing, picks him up, gives him a huge hug, sort of throws him around, and it felt like pointed that he was celebrating with him. And this is the – him and Sean John are this club, right? They are the veterans. They are the core. They're the rocks. They're the leaders.
They are out of contract.
And he's out of contract, yes.
Both
of
them.
Oh,
both
he gone.
Yeah. I'm just saying
– if I'm a club in Major League Soccer and you need a center back, I am going directly – to Alexander Collins. That is somebody that will change the dynamic of your group. And
but why wouldn't NYCFC do this?
Because he's free. So he's allowed to.
For sure, but why would he not want to stay with the club he's been good with?
Because if they continue this slide in Major League Soccer and they don't end up being competitive, then why wouldn't you? You've won an MLS Cup with New York City FC. Now, if there's a proposition out there that makes sense, why wouldn't you explore that if you're a center back?
So I think this is even a false premise because I don't think that NYCFC would offer him a DP spot just the way they're constructed, just the goals and the ideas that City Football Group have had. And I think that there's a real possibility he gets a DP offer.
Agreed.
On the open market. Again, like if you think of San Jose, Houston, like some of these teams that maybe they aren't the biggest spenders and they're looking to kind of reset under new coaches and go in a different direction. Why wouldn't you air quote overpay Alex Collins? Like look what Walker Zimmerman's done for Nashville. Look what Aaron Long does for the Red Bulls. All this like center backs like are going to continue to get paid more. And I don't think that NYC, and like one of their DP spots is already to a center back. I know that a lot of that came in acquisition costs with Thiago Martins, but I'd be surprised if NYCFC matched that. So it would be about, okay, these guys value me more, and then I get to be
or super high TAM, right? I mean,
Houston.
But
if it's super high TAM, you assume NYCFC will give him that deal too. That would be my one pushback there. I would love to see Houston Dynamo roll out the teenage Hadebe, Alex Collins, double DP center back pairing for next season. I'm sure whoever coaches them would love it as well. But I'm just saying for Nick Cushing, he's interim. Elevated from assistant to head coach. It has not gone well on the field. I think it's a little bit of a window into sort of what's going on off the field, which is positive for NYCFC if their leaders feel strongly about him and he can continue to push that club. So that game, 1 p.m. Eastern time, Red Bulls versus NYCFC. Congrats to the Red Bulls once again for clinching their spot. It's the perfect way to start the weekend. And of course, Yankee Stadium has been a site of some of the best games we've seen in this matchup. Another team clinching their spot in the playoffs last night, Austin FC. I talked about Musa Diete's hat trick, their first ever playoff appearance, just year two. And Tom, this is a massive turnaround in Major League Soccer. There have been other ones this year with the way Montreal has played, with the way LAFC struggled last year. But we can't overlook just how good Austin FC has been coming out of their expansion year.
Yeah, like I have to keep reminding myself that they only had 31 points last year and were second to the last in the West. Like, there were so many positive things that team did, and I think that the way that they ended the season with Dreyusi in, and it was kind of pretty clear that, you know, it would be unfair to have expected this MVP caliber season that he's putting together, but like you knew, okay, that's a legitimate DP, that's a legitimate talisman, somebody who could kind of carry this team forward. And there were so many other pieces in place, like Alex Ring, and you saw some flashes from Danny Prayer and like the game model that Josh Wolf was so kind of distinctive. There were so many good signs that it everybody was ready for a jump. Again, not to this extent to kind of belie how well that they've done this year. But because of all of those positive signs, it felt like last year was better than it was. But again, in reality, they were on 31 points. Like, the jump in up the table that they've done this year, and another reason why it's been sullied a little bit is because of their poor run of form lately around that LAFC, that big LAFC win. This has been a really awesome story. It's been one of the best stories in the league. Off the field, all of the atmosphere at Q2, all of that. It's been really awesome, and they should be celebrating this culmination, this win, and it was good for them to get into the playoffs with a win, because getting that Musa Gite, are you talking with my edge? The Musa Gite hat trick, like, that was cool. He's been underwhelming, but like,
yeah, oh, I thought we were celebrating.
Yeah, no, I could tell Charlie's making fun of New Jersey, but yeah, no, it's been one of the best stories in the league that I think has started to get overlooked, because they kind of hit the ground running from the beginning of the season. We forget exactly how, I guess, few points they picked up last year.
They stuck to their guns under Josh Wolf as well, right? They are the high possession team. They have the most touches in the final third. They create through those the style and the progressions that Greg Berhalter originally sort of put together, that Josh Wolf has now followed as well. If you're not watching on YouTube, Charlie is miming everything that's happening right now, because he's from New England, which isn't the Northeast, and he's never spoken to people who are actually from the Northeast in a place that matters. It's why he doesn't understand why Alex Collins would stay, because he lives in New York City, bro. Why would you ever leave? But so if you're not watching, you can watch us on YouTube as well, but we enjoy when you listen to the podcast. And congratulations to Austin FC. We will talk a lot about them because they are a genuine MLS Cup contender. They are going to have home games in the playoffs. So I promise the Austin FC fans, we are still going to break down what they will look like in the playoffs. We are not passing over that. But in you anointing yourselves as an actual playoff team, you have now taken yourself out of the conversation of literally every other MLS team, which has decided they don't want to make the playoffs and that they are going to try. I can't deal with you right now.
Hold on. Goss going out of his way to be like, no, I'm sorry we're not talking about you. Goss is worried about getting the Felipe Martins and Josh Wolf treatment. He's worried about the mentions. He doesn't want to turn. He's distancing himself from Weeby. He's like, no. I promise this is really great. We're not talking about you enough. We'll talk about you next week.
I'm distancing myself from who? I've never even heard that
from
name before.
From the conversation of getting the like negative media negativity.
No, but you said I'm distancing myself from a person, but I've never heard that name before. I don't know who that is. I couldn't possibly have figured that out. So let's get into the midweek results, how it affects the playoff race. Let's start in the Eastern Conference. It was Charlie's big takeaway. Inter Miami, 2-1 win over Columbus Crew. It was a 2.5-hour weather delay at halftime. Reports from Brett Hildebrandt, the sideline reporter for Columbus Crew, was that there was no AC in the Columbus Crew locker room, so that they were sitting in the hallway. I don't know. That was pregame. I don't know if they did that for the full 2.5 hours. Whatever it was, you come back out into the second half at 1-1, and the Crew still pushed. Yeah, the Crew pushed for the win. They pushed for 3 points. Zelarayan was dangerous. Cucho was dangerous, who scored in this game. But it's Pozuelo and Higuain that get the win. And it's bigger than that for Inter Miami. But Tom, again, as we talked about in the open, they are the key to what's been happening positively for Inter Miami this second half of the season.
Yeah, this was like, again, it was such a good pickup by the front office to go get Pozuelo. They were planning, even since the winter, that, hey, in the summer is when we're probably going to identify and sign a DP number 10. They did look into Mario Götze. They looked into a couple younger options, maybe make it a young DP. But then when it was Pozuelo was available and available at the price of just 150,000 GAM, you're just buying his DP spot essentially and trying to take it off Toronto's hands so they could sign for Bernadeschi. That has been such a good move. Like, he fits this team and this style so perfectly. He's completely rejuvenated Gonzalo Higuain. And I think that a lot of credit goes to Phil Neville for like how many times have we seen it in the past in MLS? It's so difficult to manage somebody with this career, somebody with this resume, somebody who's one of the most highest paid players in the league, benched him, called him out numerous times and saying, we need more. Like, our best players, like, you look at the other teams, their DPs show up and ours don't. He's pushed him, he's challenged him, he's benched him, but he's kept him in the group. He's kept the buy-in. And now they're getting the payoffs since Campagna got hurt. And Gonzalo Higuain has been really good for a couple months. Really good. The only conversation earlier in the year was about, oh, he's definitely going to retire, right? And now he looks like a new player, looks like a different player. Again, Pozuelo and Higuain together, it has been a really formidable duo. And this team, it's really fun to watch them become competitive, more competitive, and stick around this playoff race. Like, this was a last-ditch game. If you don't win here, you're mm-hmm. pretty much out of the playoff race. They dealt with a weather delay. I know the Columbus did too. But this team would have folded a long time ago last year, a long time ago the year before that. This is a different version of this team. The culture that's been created under Neville, I think, is going overlooked as well. So, again, this was a really good performance, again, led by Higuain and Pozuelo, but the foundation is different than it used to be for this team.
And they folded on Saturday against Chicago and came back and won. Charlie, the goal late in the game, Leo Campana did return in this one after being out for about 8 weeks. So Higuain was playing as the 10, quote unquote. Pozuelo's out there as well. I think it's all a little nebulous. Do you like that look of Campana as the center forward allowing Higuain to drop deeper? Yeah, or is that
it was
just
a late game look?
Because
they needed to win. So for me, Higuain and Pozuelo are the only two that can really unlock defenses. And because they're going to be so focused on creating goals, the rest of the, there's other players that need to step up. And if I'm looking at this group defensively, they've been so weak, and that's what's held them back. So ultimately, okay,
not this week,
the Crew, they had their opportunities. They were fortunate. They're fortunate, but you still, the what's in favor for Inter Miami looking forward is they're at DC, and DC's hopeless, right? So you're looking at DC United. They don't know who's playing. It's all tinkering. Wayne Rooney's trying to figure out who am I going to get rid of? What does next year look like? Testing the youth, right? So DC United are hopeless. Then you have away at Toronto and you're home to Orlando and Montreal. They need those nine points, right? It's 12 total, but they need to win four straight to get into the playoffs, I think. Three and a draw maybe gets you in.
I think it also depends. Yes, you have to beat Orlando head to head. One of the mm-hmm. ones you don't get a result can't be that one. If it's Montreal last week, maybe you have a shot, but you have to beat Orlando head to head. Because reminder, Orlando Columbus face off decision day. So one of those two teams will drop points in front of them. Guaranteed.
And you look at goal differential. That's what crushes them as well. They're minus 12. So that's why I'm saying Inter Miami. If you had to look at a schedule and say, man, if it's going to come down to the playoffs and these are the next four teams we have to beat to get in, you'll take this every day. You'll take this schedule every day.
And 36 hours ago, they didn't control their own destiny. And now they do. And I think for a team, I've said this all year, I just think the playoff race is a win for them because of what they were starting with. I mean, they're basically an expansion team without any of the advantages an expansion team has because of the moves they were forced into making. I think just being in the race, having those games matter, having that home Orlando game, October 5th, this deep into the season, be a playoff game. Like all of that, I think is huge for Inter Miami and what they've done. And I do think you mentioned the weaknesses defensively, but McPhee's been great. Drake Callender made arguably the save of the year to keep them ahead. Ryan Saylor and Amy Mbaki,
okay,
both draft picks.
You gonna go that
they
far?
Were phenomenal.
Do they get in the playoffs?
One of the best attacks.
You think they're in the playoffs?
I do think they will. Yeah.
Over Columbus, yes. Then?
No, over Orlando.
Woo!
Which we can talk about right now. So let's talk Columbus first. Columbus, we've talked how many times, dropping points late in games. They do it once again here. I think it was different. They didn't sit deep and defend, but once again, no pressure on Pozuelo on the top of the box. Time to pick out the pass for Higuain. They now face Portland on Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern time. That one's on ESPN, national TV, all the conversation around Caleb Porter. And it brings us to our question here in the mailbag from Lucas on Twitter, who says, if the Crew fail to make the postseason again this year, it'll be Porter's third time in his 4 years that he's been the head coach. What percentage would you give him on leaving or no longer being with the team? Reminder, the other year, he won MLS Cup. So I pose that to you too.
More likely than not, whatever percentage you want to give that would be. Because I don't know how you can defend missing the playoffs these last 2 years again if they don't get over the line, particularly with the juice that Cucho gave when he got here. Like, that should have rejuvenated. That should have been the defibrillators to, like, jolt this team into life. And they did at first. And then I think that we all kind of wrote them off as, like, oh, yeah, they're definitely going to make the playoffs, games in hand. Look at the talent on that team. And, like, they're just not closing games out. They're not playing on the front foot. Like, hearing you say your takeaway from the game against Miami, like, going, like, yeah, they really tried to go for it. Like, that's a positive in and of itself, because there's so many times you watch this team and it's just like, why are you not attacking more? You have so much attacking talent. You have these two guys in Cucho and Lucas Alarcón. What's so great about them? They have individual moments of brilliance that you can't plan for. Those should be bonus goals, but those have been the only goals they're getting. So it's been really frustrating. And, you know, the coaching cycles that come, like, how long was Caleb in Portland? Was it 5 years? 4 or 5 years? Like, a guy with kind of his personality, they burn out a little bit. They burn out the locker room. There's a lot of players who have been there for this entire
lack
time.
Lack of ideas.
I'd say more likely than not if they don't make the playoffs.
Lack of creativity. But
yes,
I think they get in the playoffs. I think that 41, and they have two home games.
Yeah.
Yes, it's Portland and Red Bulls, but I think with at Charlotte and at Orlando, I think they get in.
It shouldn't come to the end of the year and be like, are they going to get in?
They're in the last playoff spot. You're right. It shouldn't come to this, especially when you have Cucho Hernandez and you already had Lucas Arrayán. You have a good base and foundation. You won an MLS Cup a couple of years ago. Great. But this team has not moved forward with the, with everyone expecting them, considering all the players that they do have. And let's not forget, Darlington Nagbe is still class, like first class. Not somebody who's going to get you a ton of assists and goals, but that's not what they ask him to do. If he was playing in a more advanced role and they say, hey, Darlington, you're the 10, you need to get goals. You need to putting that pressure on him. But that's not what Columbus Crew ask him to do. They ask him just to keep possession, get on the ball, get the ball to Lucas Arrayán so he can break into space in those transition moments because he's so gifted on the ball. So given that, I think this team just hasn't really evolved since they won the championship. There hasn't been anything new where you say, man, look at their style, look at the philosophy. It's changed a little bit because we all have to evolve. You have to adjust. You can't stick with the same tactics, the same players year after year after year and think that you're going to change and that no one else around you is going to grow and play you differently. So I still think they have enough to get into the playoffs.
Let me play Caleb Porter's agent for a second and sort of give you the postseason spiel, which would be, I started the year with no center forward because clearly we weren't giving Giassi's artist the contract and he was not a part of the group. I didn't get Cucho till halfway through the year. Arthur missed a larger chunk of the year than we expected. Aiden Morris coming back from an ACL tear. Pedro Santos missed a ton of time as well. If they make the playoffs, because I do think that is the big if, he could argue, okay, now I've got an offseason to build with Cucho and Zellerion as the focus. And I think that will be the conversation if they make the postseason at all. And let's be honest, right? No one wants to play them in the playoffs because Zellerion and Cucho are elite game breakers. And you never know what's going to happen with guys like that on the field. But I agree with both of you that they haven't taken the steps over the last 2 years you would have liked to have seen. But Cucho's 23. Mm-hmm. That's a build for the future signing. And he's brought in under Caleb Porter. So we will see. This is his fourth year as manager in 5 years. Anders brought into the chat in Portland, which is when it sort of got stale. Let's go to the other team that I brought up because I do think Orlando stayed out of this conversation as long as they could, but have now pushed themselves back in and their own decision. You understand, Open Cup hangover Saturday at Philly. They do the thing everyone does at Philly. They lose by a zillion goals. They give up a touchdown. Then they come home and play Atlanta midweek. An Atlanta team that just suspended Joseph Martinez, gave up a bunch of goals to TFC, even in a win. All over the place, swapping out goalkeepers, changing everything they do. And they lose 1-0 at home after a weather delay themselves to start things out. Thiago Almada, unbelievable goal, probably goal of the week. Then gets called up to the Argentine national team for this set of friendlies. And this is the full team. Messi, Di Maria, Dybala, Lautaro Martinez, all of them. There's a chance Thiago Almada is going to the World Cup. So congratulations to him. And that's huge for Major League Soccer overall, Tom. Let's talk about him for a second, and then we'll dig in with the rest of Orlando. How big is it to see him get called into this team and sort of start performing for Atlanta?
This is incredible because this is a kid who, like, he's obviously been on their radar. He's this really, really talented Argentine youth international. But making a move to MLS, like, for whatever we say, and obviously we, you know, value the league very highly, and we think the quality is good enough. National team managers usually don't, but for countries that are big time countries like Argentina, Italy, like the air quote, like blue bloods of the soccer world. So the fact that he's getting a call up in the last camp before the World Cup, that means he has a legitimate chance to make the World Cup team. I wouldn't have been surprised if they pushed this to, all right, the first post World Cup camp, bringing in young players, new players, Thiago Almada is going to be there. The fact that he's going there now means that, again, the Argentine, the coaching staff value what he's doing right now with Atlanta. He looks awesome. Like, it didn't take him that long to really start showing flashes, but he's been more consistent lately. And, like, I think the joke early on, because he picked the same number as Barco, he has a similar stature as Barco, he came around the similar age that Barco did, and he came here. But, like, he can make decisions at a high level, which is what really separates him from Barco. Like, that was a big frustration with that $15 million signing. And then Atlanta go down to South America again and go for $16 million for Almada. And again, they do some similar things in terms of really good technically, really good quality. Like, you can see how dangerous they are. But his decision-making is what separates him. And that's what separates a really talented player to somebody who's in the Argentine national team and on this kind of trajectory is going to be sold for a lot of money one day to a big European team.
He has carried them the last few weeks, and it's probably not to a playoff spot, but it is probably out of the shadow of Joseph, at least for him, of like, he's the guy and this is his team and he's played that way. Should have had two goals in this game and sealed it earlier, but fine, whatever, that happens. Charlie, let's talk about the other side though with Orlando, because that's the fascinating one. They win Open Cup. They're on a high. They're sitting in fifth place in the East, and it's kind of, everything's perfect. Just make the playoffs. You're in CCL next year already. You've won your club's first ever trophy. Now two straight losses. The big one against Atlanta for this Orlando City team. I've mentioned again a million times, they still have to go to Inter Miami. They still have to play against Columbus. They host TFC this weekend. Again, try and put your finger on things. What's going on with Orlando City? Is it all emotional? Because this game felt different to me than other Orlando losses where they're plotting. They don't know their direction. This was just about finishing quality, and they didn't
And I think that's what's going to prevent Orlando from really doing anything this year in the postseason. They got their U.S. Open Cup win. That was the big thing for them. A major trophy. They're in CCL next year. I just don't think they have enough to be competitive in the attacking half for me. They lack a player who can, one, finish and be a constant threat, because I think when they brought Mauricio Pereira as a deeper midfield, that gave them another player who's good on the ball, good passing, and creating space for people in the attacking third. But Benji Michel, he's a super sub. That's not a player you're going to depend on to score goals and have a deep run in the playoffs. He's a good player to come off the bench and change the tempo, give you another look, give you something different, use his pace to stretch back lines. But they don't have a nine. That's something that they're really missing. And for me, this Orlando team is 7-8 at home. That is not a good home record at all either. Teams go there and they get results. So that's the team for me that's going to drop. And I think I expect Cincinnati to go over them. I expect the Crew to jump over them. And they're going to be fighting for that last spot against Miami and Atlanta and the Revs.
And that 7-8 at home to me is that lack of identity of like, when you're on our field and we set the terms, we know how we play and they don't. And that's but then when they go on the road and they're against the ball and Facundo Torres has space in transition, then they're able, and Juan has space down the wing, then they're able to get results. That's kept them in the playoff race. They've been in the entire year. They have not dropped below that playoff line, I don't believe, since they've gone over it like third week of the season. And so, Tom, it's a little surprising that they're even here. Do you have a similar reaction to Charlie? And then I would say, he's talking about not having a nine. They spent a DP spot there.
That's a miss.
Is that a miss? Are you calling that already with Arcancara?
That's a miss.
I think Charlie might be.
I'll go with the home form first. You know, we talked about the Red Bulls not doing great at home or how much better they did on the road. Like, Orlando's 8 home losses are easily the most of any team above the playoff line. Like, that's why they're still in this conversation. If they took care of business against Atlanta just this week, we wouldn't be talking about this. They'd be on 45 points, you know, six or seven points above the line. So that first and foremost is a big problem and a big surprise for this team. But yeah, with the number nine, Urshan Kara's like box score stats aren't terrible. Like, he's got however many goals. The goals to minutes ratio isn't awful. But like you said, it's been a struggle. They don't look kind of jointed. It hasn't worked out as they've expected at this point. He was supposed to be somebody who came in immediately because he's more of a veteran player, at least in his prime, somebody who did really well in the Austrian league. That's something that the Orlando front office was saying, that other players have come from the Austrian league and come here and done well. And again, Urshan Kara, it's definitely not up to his quality or what they expected it to be. I'm hesitant to call it so early. I'm a firm believer in the Gauss theorem. But again, there are reasons to be concerned because not every player recovers in year two. So he's going to be somebody like, again, we would be talking about Ake Loba like this last year. And I was given a ton of optimism. Right, and then he hasn't started pretty much at all. Like,
tell you that so, right yeah. now.
Again, I'm like a little bit later. I give a long leash on this. And I understand that that's, you know, something that I usually lean towards for a lot of players. So I'm not ready to kind of cut off Urshan Kara.
Should I rope Orlando into the who would trade for Joseph Martinez combo? Is that even legally possible?
Mauricio Pereira, I think, is out of contract. And
no, sorry. I mean, like, are you allowed to sign the guy who has
There's no shot the fans would warm up to him. And you've heard Justin Merrill talk about his experience in Orlando and Sasha Kalestin too. Like, when the fans turn on you in that place, you can't really get him back. So I don't think it's possible.
But would you even go there if you were Orlando?
No, you need more movement anyway. Joseph in his current state isn't moving enough. Like, and that's kind of been the problem with Urshan Kara, that he's not been dynamic enough. So they need a different profile up. That's why when Benji Mitchell came on during the Open Cup, he looks electric. And he is electric, but it was also the relativity theory of, like, he's coming in for a guy who's not moving as much and is obviously much slower and it's just a different type of player. So he really jumped off the screen.
I don't want to be the Matt Doyle here, and I guarantee you I don't know the relativity theory, but that's definitely not what it is. But I appreciate the use of it, Tom, and trying to pull a little science in here as well. Atlanta against Philadelphia, that one's 3:30 p.m. Eastern time on Saturday on national TV, Unimas, 2DN, and Twitter. We got a mailbag question with this one. How many more points would Atlanta United have had if they played Gudinho over the last couple of months instead of Rocco Rios Novos? Tom, you feel very strongly about this.
That's so obvious. That's a change that should have happened a while ago. And even going back one more, they should have signed Josh Cohen, the American who is playing for Maccabi Haifa in the Champions League right now. They were interested in him before Brad Guzan got hurt. And I don't understand the disconnect between once Guzan went down, okay, let's
get him.
The day that the secondary transfer window started on a free transfer and a pretty manageable contract from what I know. So I'm really disappointed and surprised. And again, maybe their season would have been saved earlier this year.
Well, Josh Cohen playing in Champions League had a lead against PSG, didn't hang on to it, but whatever it is, Atlanta United, Philadelphia, I think that's going to be a fun one on Saturday because there's a chance you get a touchdown from Philly. They've already done it in Atlanta in CCL, if you remember, a couple of years back. Otherwise, it's probably going to be a wide open 6-4 game. Anyway, let's move to the Western Conference and stick with this playoff race conversation. The LA Galaxy, they've got a game in hand. Everything's good. They've got a game in hand. Spoilers, if you lose every single game or tie, the game in hand becomes less important. The Galaxy go to Vancouver, they lose 3-0, and then reported, I think Hard Journalist mentioned this, who covers Vancouver Whitecaps, refused to open the locker room to media after the game. This is normally one of the more accessible teams.
Why would they
in
do
Major
that?
League Soccer? And then we've got fan questions here. I don't know, Charlie. Let's start to talk about this here. We've got fan questions coming from us. We have tried to put our finger on what's wrong with the Galaxy. Here's the question, sort of taking it to the next step. Brian at Thaz says, if the Galaxy don't make the playoffs, what needs to happen? Are you at that point already, Charlie? Are you saying it's over for them? And what would you say would need to change either way, it feels like, by the way? Because even if they do make the playoffs, it's another collapse where they start the year hot and they sort of fall apart down the stretch.
If you're looking at coaches that have had just 1 year under their belt, Houston comes to mind, and not being able to finish out the season because there's no clear identity within this team. And it's still the case. I look at Kevin Cabral. I look at Victor Vasquez. Victor Vasquez can barely move. And you're acquiring him to move to be your 10 to create all these chances when he can barely move. And when he does move, it's not fast. It's very easy to track. You can be out of position, completely out of position, and get back no problem. So transition, it almost nullifies the Galaxy in transition because he cannot move. And then so you look at other players who've been effective.
I just don't understand.
How is he not playing? And so he, well, this is the thing. He's on fire. He's playing. And then all of a sudden, you're not playing him, and he gets out of a rhythm because he's not playing. And he comes in last night, and he looks like how a player would look in preseason. Heavy touches, not in a good form, and it's because you don't allow him to build off of his success. So now you're not getting the Jovlich that you once had because that's gone. You're not in a good rhythm. So I'm looking at the Galaxy, and Ricky Poch is a fantastic signing. That he's a great player. That's fantastic. The Galaxy were able to sign him. But in terms of building all around him and building something moving forward and having identity, that does not exist. And the back line, still poor. Still poor. If I'm a striker, I'm like, let's go. Let's play the Galaxy. I can't wait. I know my chances are coming because we look at that goal that they scored in the second half, Vancouver, when Derek Williams is sleeping and the run in behind him. And you're just thinking, they're still making these mistakes at this stage of the season when you need to win, when the playoffs are on the line. Oh, it's not good. So if they don't make the playoffs, given that there's no identity and they're switching things up left and right and they can't get the player selection right, at the very least, I might be thinking about a change. Even given the success of Vanny and given the success of the front office, this has not gone well for the Galaxy. This is not the same Galaxy that we're used to seeing, at least competitive. This is why
Charlie, this is the Galaxy that we expect to see since the Tam era. They had a little bit of Zlatan magic, but it's been this. It's just been a decent team that have a lot of money and a lot of air quote big names that have just, you know, coming up short. I think the only thing that I disagree with there is loosely their identity is they want to break teams down with the ball. And I think that they've shown enough of that where it's more personnel for me. Look, the 3DP spots, Chicharito's gone cold a little bit. He's 34 years old now, and they got a contract option for him next year. So maybe that opens a DP spot. I don't know what you do there. But Douglas Costa, 3 goals, 1 assist in 1,200 minutes. Kevin Cabral, 1 goal, 3 assists in 1,600 minutes. That's it. That's where the problem is. If they had just a replacement level DP on the wings, we wouldn't be talking about the playoff line because things would be so different. The player selection is what I really don't get. I don't understand when, you know, I know that Victor Vazquez is really great on the ball. It's fun watching him and Ricky Pooch play together because particularly Vazquez, it looks like every time he touches the ball, he wants to pass it to Pooch. Like it was like, I was mesmerized watching that game in the first half last night when it was like Pooch, Vazquez. And they were completely and utterly dominant. And then they didn't score because they have so much trouble finishing plays off. So again, like it depends on what you got to do. That's why with Jovlich, it's so frustrating. He's a goal scorer, and this team isn't scoring goals. And they've switched to a little bit of two up front. Why does Kevin Cabral keep starting over him? Even if you want to start Cabral, why can't Jovlich be the second forward and put Cabral somewhere else? Like, it's mind-boggling to me. This is a player. Is it just because of that Cabral's a DP and Jovlich is a U-22 initiative? Jovlich was bought for $4 million. If they just switched the tags, would Jovlich be starting every single week instead of Cabral?
I don't know what it is.
It's beyond confusing. I think that's the biggest criticism of this team is that there seems to be a solution to your goal-scoring problems that they're just not using until the 70th minute. Yeah.
Well, it's not just goal-scoring problems because Chicharito, he's out of form. That's clear to see. He's missing chances. He's low on confidence. He's not in good form. He's still making good runs. He's still putting himself in good positions. He's just not scoring. Well, that's been Cabral from the beginning of the year. So that nothing's changed. Chicharito has absolutely scored, and he has been in good form because he's a finisher. Rely on him just to finish. So therefore, you need to have someone who can create chances for him, play balls into the box. Chase Gasper did not look good defensively or in the attack.
That was a tough performance for him.
A very, very tough performance. And that's being kind. So
Julian has not looked good either.
No, he didn't. And then, you know, it's hard to say Caceres, he just came in. He's supposed to be one of those players who's going to make everyone better. He can play anywhere across the back line, but Derek Williams has been there from the jump. And it's been a struggle with him, whether it's poor challenges, bad decision-making, distribution, you can name it across the board. It hasn't been good enough. And so if I'm a Galaxy fan, I am heated. I am absolutely heated. You sign all these big name players because that's what the Galaxy do. They sign these big name players because if you're a big name player, you know the Galaxy. That's been the brand across the world because of David Beckham. Put the Galaxy on the map. Everyone thinks of LA, unbelievable weather. That's the big club to play for. Yet you're not doing it on the pitch where it matters. And if I'm a fan, I'm saying, hey, what happened to us being dominant, to us competing? Because this is not good enough. This isn't quality. And not that you say Efra Alvarez is the player that has got to play every week and every game. But if he's on the Mexican national team, he's this youth player that you've developed. He's the player that Zlatan Ibrahimovic and a number of other players have said, hey, the kid's got it. The kid has got every tool. He is so skillful. He can play. And I guess the question is fitness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then put him on the pitch. Challenge him.
Yeah. Listen. Efra got chances this year. He did not perform. He has gotten opportunities now. I would put Efra in my soccer team every day of the week. I love watching him play. I've loved watching him play for years. He was not effective this year, but your points are all taken. Both of you clearly very upset about the LA Galaxy. The Galaxy, interestingly enough, they play against the Colorado Rapids this weekend, who beat San Jose 2-1 and are now 4 points back of seventh place. If they were to beat the Galaxy this weekend, they'd move into a tie. The Galaxy would still have that game in hand.
Oh, no. Rapids
that we keep
are done.
Talking about. Charlie says the Rapids are done. That's
no,
fair for them.
They're done.
But at least they got
Dallas and Austin as well. They're done.
At least they're making a run out of it and making it interesting. Let's stick in the Western Conference. Let's talk Minnesota LAFC. 1-1 draw on Tuesday night. Maybe the best game of the week. Wide open opportunities both ways. A ton of talent on the field. Big to see Reynoso come back from the injury. For LAFC, it was a bizarre game for a number of reasons. They had no fullbacks healthy. So they start the game with five in the back. Buonga and Kellen Acosta. It shifted more to four and Segura playing left back. Arango comes off at halftime. Bale gets the start. Vela scores a stunning goal.
I have no idea the difference. Like when they put out the lineup graphic.
Do you have any
lineup,
idea of what you saw from LAFC here, Tom? Is this formation gonna be? Sort of recovery
so
from this
up for
losing
15
streak?
Minutes, I'm just trying to figure out what their shape is, and I still couldn't figure it out. Like, it was mind-boggling me. It's like, wait a minute. There's a defensive... I was like, is Kellen Acosta playing right back, right wing back, and center mid at the same time? Latif Blessing is kind of in the same space. Like, I kept on looking, waiting for the pass map to, like, update itself, and it was just this completely wide-open, just... organism of like no formation, just vibes. Like Buonga was technically the wing back, but also like not at all because he was playing like a vertical winger. Like there was so much going on there. I think it comes down to Palacios, Hollingshead, and Escobar being out because I this cannot be the plan moving forward. And if you're gonna play all four of Buonga, Bale, Vela, and Chicho Arango together, it has to be with like Ilian Cifuentes, like it, or Acosta, or like it has to be like a double pivot. All right, we're just gonna attack with you four. And kind of take it easy in defense. Like, yeah, that was it was definitely a vibes game. There was about a billion fouls in the first half, so that kind of it was still fun and open. But if there was kind of less fouling, it would have been more fun and more open. But yeah, Vela was Vela. LAFC is now -7 goal difference with Bale on the field and +33 with him off it. Correlation, causation, all that. But still, that's a pretty damning stat.
Okay, Adrian Heath, relax for a second. Let's flip it to Minnesota, though, Charlie. They hadn't scored a goal in three games. They hadn't gotten a result since DiBassi got hurt. I thought they were good against Portland on the weekend. They were better here. They looked like the team that should win towards the end. Reynoso comes back. He helps the attack. And defensively, they didn't get pulled apart by an LAFC team with... as much as they've struggled, all that talent on the field. Was this the line in the sand for Minnesota that they've settled and that they can be? I think what a lot of people expect, one of the top two or three contenders in the Western Conference.
Yes. Minnesota is going to contend. Man. They're a competitive team. They have some players that are just consistent. I think Arriaga is probably one of their better signings in terms of someone who's going to give them grit, cover a lot of ground, tough tackler. Arriaga has been a massive signing for Minnesota. And I don't think he gets the necessary pub because Reynoso has just been the guy who attracts all the eyes because of his gifts. But I think this is a team that on their day, you can expect them to be challenging for that Western Conference title. That this is a quality side when they play well, when they execute, because they're good defensively. They know how to defend as a group, as a unit, and they have the ability to counter, but they also have the ability to possess and knock the ball and slow down the tempo. So when they are on point and everyone's healthy, this is a team that can compete for sure. And Dane St. Clair has come up with the big saves for this group. He's also, there's been some weeks where you're like,
but you still say when fit, like Kaidabasi's out. Goal. He's not coming back out for the season.
If he continues to be sharp,
I'll need to see it. To
and he's playing
the team,
like the Dane St. Clair around the All-Star game. Then I would not be surprised if this team's in the Western Conference final. He does, no doubt.
One thing to note, so they close the year pretty soft schedule. SKC, San Jose, Vancouver, two teams that are one team that's already eliminated, one
the
team
softest
that's pretty much
schedule eliminated. Of all time.
But I will point this one little thing out. SKC, I think they're undefeated in five. Reynoso is suspended on Saturday with yellow card accumulation. He is the highest usage player in Major League Soccer. They are two teams, one with him, one without him. So that's probably their most dangerous game left. Let's just hit this real quick. Houston knock off the New England Revolution 3-1. Congratulations, Fafa Pico, for doing his thing. We were going to do a longer conversation. We will over the next 2 weeks because we'll have some time with the international break. Charlie, you were on the road with them this week, the loss at Red Bull Arena and then the loss in Houston. Do you have anything you'd like to get off your chest before we move on?
Oh, I've got it all off my chest. I have nothing on my chest. I let people know this was not good enough from the Revs. They don't deserve to be in the playoffs when you go up a goal on the road knowing that you're missing, you know, some key players, and Carlos Hill was gone because his wife had a child. So, you know, in terms of going up a goal, knowing what you're up against, and then just completely falling asleep and ending up losing, leaving Red Bull Arena with 0 points, then going on the road to Houston, which is a must-win game, and playing in the way you did, being just out-competed, just for me, if you play like that, you do not deserve to be in the playoffs. And at 38 points with three games to go, they have Montreal, then Atlanta at home, and then away at Chicago. You could have said, man, if we just needed 6 points from those three games, I would have said, well, yeah, they'll be in the playoffs. But to have to win three and still need help, I don't see it.
It is the final weekend before the international break. We're going to dig into the USMNT roster in just a second. We got some tweets here from Noel for USMNT. Probably a good idea to push your fandom there right now. He says, Revs fan here, give me a reason to live. Followed up by Will Sicard, who says, is Georgi Petrovic going to win goalkeeper of the year or newcomer of the year? He has been the bright spot of this season so far. Me and Charlie talked about that on MLS Today, I think on Tuesday. So you can go back and listen to that one. Search MLS Today on Spotify.
Petrovic is the truth. He is the absolute truth. So for the Revs fan, look forward. Petrovic is incredible. This is a keeper. I mean, whoever would have thought some keeper is going to come in and fill Matt Turner's shoes?
Yeah.
Petrovic did that. And his upside, his potential is greater than Matt Turner. So that tells you something. This kid is a star. He is a star. So in terms of having a goalie that you can look forward to next year, which is not an easy thing in MLS to have a goalkeeper that you can depend on and know, you know what? If we, as long as we give him a decent back line, we are in good shape. So I think from that standpoint, the Revs hit a grand slam signing Georgi Petrovic.
It's going to be a tough one this weekend. They face off against Montreal, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. It is one of many good games this week, which are teams on the playoff race against teams towards the top. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, Atlanta facing off against Philadelphia. We mentioned Orlando facing TFC. Galaxy Rapids, one of them as well. That's more of a 6-pointer. Vancouver, Seattle, you could argue one as well. And then, as we said, national TV on Sunday, Columbus, Portland to start the day off. LAFC facing off against the Houston Dynamo, who put up those three goals in that one. So a massive week of action in MLS, because it does take us to the international break for teams to reset. There are a few MLS games, which we'll obviously have coverage for you here as we go through the next 2 weeks, including that Cali Classico that's been rescheduled. I think FC Cincinnati has a game as well. But this takes us to our national team conversation. USMNT roster, the final window before the World Cup roster has to be set by Greg Berhalter and his staff. He called in 26 players, which coincidentally is the exactly amount of players they will have on a World Cup roster. You have, I'm sure, seen most of this list. If not, you can go to MLSsoccer.com to see the full list. US Soccer has put it out there, as well as every other person who is connected to sports on the planet. It is a huge story. Charlie, I joked at the beginning, but let's dig straight into it. The forwards listed, if you don't know, Brendan Aaronson, Paul Areola, I think you'd expect. Those are the wingers, Gio Reyna as well, Christian Pulisic. The other players are Jesus Ferreira, Jordan Morris, Ricardo Pepi, and Josh Sargent. So one of the names I didn't mention is Union Berlin starter Jordan Pifok, who has 2 goals, 2 assists coming off a Golden Boot last season. I did not mention Brandon Vasquez as well, who's been in the Golden Boot race in the U.S. What, over the last 36 hours, has sort of been your take on what you're hearing from Greg Berhalter and your thoughts on the number 9 position? As anyone not watching YouTube, Charlie Davies just pulled out his notes on the number 9 position.
No, I think Pifok's the only real surprise here, because he's playing for the top team in the Bundesliga. This isn't the Austrian league or the Swiss league or the Bundesliga 2.
No,
this
farmer is the leagues out there.
This is the top team in the Bundesliga, and he's performing. So in terms of players who have warranted an opportunity to go into the camp and deserved one, I think that's Jordan Pifok. What's working against Jordan Pifok is his style of play. In Greg Berhalter's mind, he does not do the things that he needs his number 9 to do, which is press, to be able to shape the team defensively, to have enough pace to cover the ground, and being able to check for the ball and do those dynamic runs that he is not known for. Jordan Pifok is a finisher. He's the one who gets in the box. He's a big body. He occupies space. But I think there's something to be said in terms of having some variety in your number 9 pool, because maybe the game changes and the player that you need, who is pressing and doing those dynamic runs, isn't needed in that match. So you have to adjust. And in order to adjust, you have to have different player profiles. And this is a player who's scoring goals in the Bundesliga against top competition. So you don't have to worry about, oh, can he perform against top level competition internationally? Because he's doing it week in and week out. So I think that's a player that needs to be included in the World Cup roster. So, you know, yeah, he misses the 100%. Camp, but that's not saying he's not going to be in the World Cup roster. So I think Greg Berhalter is doing a good job, because he's at least going to get a look at Josh Sargent, who's performing really well with Norwich right now. He's scoring. He's in form. Jesus Ferreira is doing it in MLS. He's going to be your lock for sure. He's a lock. No, there's no doubts. I think another question for Greg Berhalter is, you know, in terms of your wingers, you have Christian Pulisic, and he's a lock. Whether he's playing with Chelsea and getting a lot of minutes or not, he's going to be starting. And then on your other wing, Timo Weah is injured right now. He's not fit. So Brandon Aaronson naturally is your starter because of how well he's doing at Leeds. Now, Gio Reyna is still getting up to speed. When Gio Reyna, if he's healthy and fit come World Cup time and he's performing for Dortmund, that's when you start to have headaches, because Yunus Musa is locked in. He's playing at Valencia. He's excelling. I think playing under Gennaro Gattuso has really helped him evolve. And then you have MMA, McKenny and Adams. That's the strongest part of this team is the midfield. That core, they're all playing, right? You don't have to worry about sharpness. They're all playing. They're playing for top clubs, and they have good chemistry and synergy in that midfield. They have a good understanding. So that's the core of this team. The attacking and the center backs, those are the two areas where I'm like,
Charlie,
how is that
let me ask
work?
You. Let me ask you this before you get into the defense. Mm-hmm. On the number 9 position, either of you.
Yeah.
The availability towards the end of Weah or Reyna or Aaronson or whoever it is, does that change your calculus, or should it change Greg Berhalter's on Pifok versus Pepi versus Sargent? Do the wingers who end up on the roster and their profiles change to you who the 9s are or who you want them to be?
No, because I mean, the reason why he's playing this system and this formation is because the way he wants to play. So regardless of who's playing on the wings, the system's not going to change. That's how he's playing. High press, a lot, high energy, being able to, you know, make certain runs, come inside, invert to give space to the outside backs, which Sergiño Dest is going to need because he's going to be attacking quite often. But in the World Cup, there's going to naturally going to be times where you can't be on the front foot. You can't attack. You're going to have to drop deep. You're going to ask these guys to defend a whole lot. So for me, it's always going to come down to how well is that number nine playing, because ultimately the holdup play is going to be huge. And then how much space can you create with your runs, whether it's for yourself or for Christian Pulisic, Brendan Aaronson, Gio Reyna, Yunus Musah.
Yeah, so this is why I'm disappointed that Brandon Vasquez isn't here. I believe that Jordan Pefok absolutely deserves it as well. His goals speak for itself. And like you were saying, I don't think that this rules him out of the final squad whatsoever. And he's going to continue as long as he continues to play and everything. But the national team has had him in camps before. The national team knows what his kind of strengths and weaknesses are. He's a goal scorer. He doesn't exactly fit the game model. Brandon Vasquez, they haven't seen him with this group or anything. I was really disappointed that he wasn't named to this roster. Doyle wrote it in his column, like all the numbers why of in MLS, Brandon Vasquez is elite at both hold-up play and like vertical behind-the-shoulder runs. I really wish that he got a chance in this camp to show what he could do, because I don't think that you could bring him into the full team for the World Cup without having him in a camp whatsoever. Even like,
I think his chance
is done. There's going to be an MLS players-only camp for the guys who are eliminated. So if Cincinnati are out in the first round or whatever it is, he'll be with the coaching staff and everything, but he's not going to be with Pulisic and Reyna and McKinney and Adams and all of the players that, like, I want to see him. I want to see what the force multiplier is. Like, look at how well he's done with Lucho Acosta this year and the way that Cincinnati plays versus, you know, what he, you know, he hasn't gotten a ton of minutes prior to this year in the past. So I don't know. I think that you know what you have in Pefok, right? I think you know what you have in Pepe. I know that the idea is to try to get him a little confidence here, even though he hasn't scored a club goal in a year now. We don't know what Brandon Vasquez looks with this group. So again, I really wish that there was room on this roster. Like, there was no need to cap it at 26. Like, I guess I can see it, but like, again, I think that it would have been more valuable to give him a chance for a couple weeks, for a week or whatever in training, get him a few minutes in the games and just see what it looks like. Like, what's the harm?
I just want to say, I would have said that when he was hot. He was scoring goals. He was all over the field. He was pressing, doing everything that you said, Tom. But if you look at his performances over the last 10 games, it's been very poor. He does not deserve to go to a camp.
Fair enough.
Because in terms of his passing percentage, I told him, I said, all-star.
Skills challenge, Vasquez, baby. Eliminated Brandon Vasquez.
You're scoring goals and you're making good runs and you've shown that you can pass. But throughout the 90 minutes, if I'm saying, what's your impact? How often are you getting the ball and laying it off, making the smart decision, connecting passes? Sometimes you don't do that. The easy passes are the ones that you miss and you lose possession. You can't get away with that internationally. Sometimes you don't have the ball. Your team finally wins it back. They play it up to you. They depend on you to keep that ball, to make the next pass, to bring other players into the attack. That is so crucial internationally. And if you can't do that, then you won't be effective for the U.S. men's national team. And if you look at the past 10 games, there are a couple of games where he had under 35, under 40% passing percentage and no goals or assists. You're not going to make the national team with that style of play. So for me, I think Pefok's the only real argument to be included here in the attack.
Smoked San Jose last weekend. I know that if I say that, it'll piss Charlie off. So that's why I said it, because it has no relevance. I will add this. Sorry.
Hey, you're a smart man.
I just saw myself.
I didn't take that bait. So go ahead.
Nice. I will add this. And you could say it's tenuous with Malik Tillman, with Joe Scally. No one got called in that has not been with the group. And I think that's where Brandon Vasquez is stepped behind. And it feels like, and I think fair to Greg Berhalter, and he's staking his name on this. He is valuing chemistry. He's valuing the group in a year in which he doesn't get 6.5 weeks. He doesn't get multiple friendlies and COVID affected. He did not get a full natural cycle to build a group together. And so I can understand that to an extent. And that's sort of what you're seeing, I think, across all the call-ups, right? We saw it when Shaq Moore got called in for the end of qualifying. I think you're seeing it with Sam Vines getting the opportunity as well. Obviously, Carter Vickers, Malik Tillman, and someone else that I just said, who I can't remember again. They are a little... Oh, Joe Scally. They're a little bit outside that, but I don't think it's wrong that he's giving those opportunities. Scally obviously starting in the Bundesliga as well. He also didn't close the door on Jordan Pefok. He says, we know what Jordan can do. He's been great in the Bundesliga. We don't want to give up on Pepe. It feels like it's Pepe's spot to lose. And with the way he's been playing, he probably will lose it. But Greg Berhalter is trying this one last chance to sort of push him. Now he's in the Eredivisie. Does he get confidence coming into this camp? Does he go back and score goals? If he does, he probably makes it. If not, it's Pefok's spot to have back. And I guess the hope there is Pefok's professional enough to, even with the way he's been pushed out, still come in and perform with the opportunity to go to a World Cup. Reminder, next week, we've got you wall-to-wall the next 2 weeks with national team coverage. We've got Club and Country series coming out. We've got watch-alongs for the U.S. and Canada. MLSsoccer.com is everything you need. I've got MLS Today coming out every single day. We'll be talking national teams as well, still waiting on that Canada roster. But good news for them with Luca Coliosci, that at least he will come into the camp and be around them for this one. Does anyone have anything big soccer to talk about before we go into our next national team convo, which is less about players who play?
Real, for me, this camp is about who's going to partner, who gets the inside track to partner Walker Zimmerman at center back, and if Sam Vines can be a like-for-like backup for Jedi Robinson, because, you know, it's
Who would you say?
For center back?
Who do you think is the, partner with Walker?
Chris Richards is extremely talented, and we'll see what happens this weekend, but, like, you know, Doyle's laid this out before, too, but, like, the way that if this team is high-pressing, like, Aaron Long is just so perfect for that, so, again, I know that there's been criticisms of some of his performances, but I think that with Aaron Long's ability to aerially and to defend in space, I think he might have the inside job.
It has been his job so far since he's gotten healthy as well. A lot to watch out for, a lot to talk about. We will continue to do it, as I said, and of course we'll be here on Extra Time. Mr. Stuff and Things in the mailbag on Twitter says, thoughts on the USMNT kits. We saw the new kits finally officially drop for the USMNT coming into this World Cup. It's a podcast, so I have to tell you to go look it up. I can't show it to you. I apologize. If you haven't seen them, I'd be shocked that you listen to this show. One's blue with a little black, one's white. So spoilers. What are your guys' hot takes before we get out of here?
I'm feeling the tie-dye. So I know a lot of people out there have been going crazy. I like the tie-dye. And ultimately, it's about how these players do in those jerseys, because that's what they're going to remember. If they ball out in the World Cup in these jerseys, people are going to be like, oh,
hey, Greg Berhalter,
put it on.
You know how a jersey is bad? Is if you're not talking about the jersey, you're saying, well, if they play well, the jersey will look good. So I think you know how it goes.
You know how it goes. I told you, I'm a big fan of the tie-dye. The white one is yeah, it's all right. I mean, it's kind of boring. It's
you guys, I love a chest plate crest. I think that's cool.
Yes.
I think it's got a 50s throwback. You know what I think? If they play well, people will like it.
Holla at your boy.
That's what I think about that white kit. Tom, anything you have to say before we get out of here?
No, here. Don't love them, but they'll grow on us because they're that's it. We won't see any other options. So in like a
there's,
couple
there's
weeks.
There's no change in it. So you got to love it.
Like, oh, it looks it's grown on me. It's like, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, the tie-dye is fire. I don't care what people say.
I'm a Grateful Dead fan. That's not tie-dye. You can't be blue tie-dye. Like,
it is.
Stop saying tie-dye.
Do you think it is?
It's not colorful enough to be a tie-dye. Get out of here. I don't know what I would call it. I'd call it boring.
It's a blue tie-dye.
All right. We will all be in Asbury Park this weekend to debate this as necessary. USA against Japan coming up on Friday. We've got the watch-along show with you for that one. Canada, of course, the friendly as well next Friday. I don't know that we have an official kickoff time. If we do, it's 1 p.m. Eastern time because I thought I saw that somewhere. And then, of course, both of those teams have games again coming up the following week. Cali Classico next Saturday as well, so we'll have your coverage of that. But this weekend, huge weekend of MLS action starting at 1 p.m. Eastern time with that Hudson River Derby going all the way through Saturday night and then three matches on Sunday night. Thank you, Charlie, as always, for being here. Thank you, Tom, for this super sub performance. I would argue we brought you in because you've been part of the group, but with your performance, I actually think you've earned yourself.
Does that mean
a
I'm
spot
in the group
on
chat,
the final 26 man roster? Yeah. I don't know that you want to be in there, by the way. I had men's league on Monday night. I came home in the middle of MLS, and was like, okay, this is what's happening because this is what the group chat said. When I went back and watched the games, they were baseless takes that people were throwing out in that group chat. I had no idea what was going on in MLS. So I'm going to keep you safe on that one and keep you out of that one. Thank you to all of you for listening, and we'll talk to you all again soon.